Welcome to the podcast that puts a finger on the pulse of medicine and technology. On this show, you'll hear from investors, industry executives, and healthcare providers on the science and business of medicine. I'm your host, Omar M. Khatib, and this is the State of MedTech. If you're a physician listening to this, don't fast forward because you can get a CME credit for this episode. That's right. Through your quick reflection, you can unlock an AMA PRA Category 1 CME credit. So when you finish listening to this episode, or even if you decide to go online and read about the episode, you can check the show notes below. There's a link. Click that link, go, and take 30 seconds to enter your reflection about what you learned, and you get one credit. How great is that? And you know what? Don't stop there. Spread the wealth. Send the show episode to a colleague so they can get a CME credit. And if you're a medical device, pharma, biotech company, or even a hospital, and you're interested in coming on the show and maybe having a CME eligible episode, reach out to us. You can find me on LinkedIn at Omar M. Khatib and shoot me a message. We'd love to have you on. Now, on to the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very exciting, actually, our very first State of MedTech live stream special for JP Morgan. My name is Omar M. Khatib. I'm your host and head of state for the State of MedTech. I'm so excited for our guest today because, you know, I'm a surgical robotics guy. And so, you know, there's a lot of surgical robotics that have come around, nothing too excited, but this one new company came out called Moon Surgical. I was reading their CEO, Anne Ostowitz, fantastic articles on her vision about the future of surgery, this idea of the empowered surgeon. Not only that, but just to make him blush, but one of my dear mentors and friends, Jeffrey Albers, a very well-respected product leader in the world of surgical robotics, also happened to go there. So when I saw Jeff being recruited to a place like that, I had to know what they were up to. For me, surgical robotics, it's like watching football. I see trades going on. I see new teams being formed. And so I had to have them on our live stream. I was very lucky to get them during JP Morgan. So let me bring them on live. Here we are. Oops, and I'm going to adjust it. There we go. Anne Ostowitz and Jeffrey Alvarez. How are you doing? Can you hear me? And can you see
me? Yes, we can hear you loud and clear.
Fantastic.
Hi, Omar.
Fantastic.
Hey, Omar. Good to see you.
Hey, great to see you, Jeff. It's been a while. And, you know, not to make you guys nervous, but this live stream is taking off. I'm seeing 45, 50, 61, 62. It's going up. So a lot of people are watching live. For those who are tuning in live, here's the thing. Whether it's Twitter, YouTube, or LinkedIn, you can drop comments in the comment box. I'm keeping an eye out on it. So if you ask an interesting question, I'll show your comment and we can ask Moon Surgical's leadership live. So feel free, show us some love in the comments, drop some emojis, drop some comments. Let's make this an exciting discussion. So with that being said, let me, you know, give you the floor. Anne, Jeff, you can both kind of introduce yourself to our audience. And let's start with Anne first.
Sure. Hi, everyone. I'm Anne Ostowitz. I'm the CEO of Moon Surgical. I'm a partner at Sofinnova Partner. I'm a trained biomedical engineer, trained both in Europe and in the US. I've worked for about a decade in medtech startups in the field of endoscopy and surgery, and then joined an entity called MDStart, which is a medtech seed fund and accelerator. Currently one of the strategies managed by Sofinnova Partners, and have created, funded, and developed a number of companies through MDStart. And Moon Surgical is one of our latest, treasures, picks. And I realized as I was building the team behind Moon Surgical and developing the technology and the opportunity, how amazing a project it was, how disruptive a product it could be, and how large the opportunity and the market was. And I'm very happy to be sharing that story with you today.
I'm Jeff Alvarez, spent 20 years in med device startups and a big focus in surgical robotics at Hanson Medical, and then leading product early at Auris Health, and then ran my own startup in a unique breast pump for a number of years, and then led product at Potrero Medical. and just absolutely loves the surgical robotic space, and never thought I'd be working in on a laparoscopy robot, because there was not anything exciting there for a number of years for me, but was just absolutely floored when I met Ann and saw the system and what the vision was.
Fantastic. And sorry to give you guys a little bit of a heart attack. So I just wanted to exit out of the screen just for a little bit. I didn't go anywhere. So great. You know, let me start off with kind of a interesting question. And again, you know, I love surgical robotics. This is what I started my career in. But my first question to you is, why does the world need another surgical robot? Because at least from my perspective, there's a lot of exciting robots out there. The problem, though, is that as much as I love technology, a lot of these robots are just adding like incremental improvements in an area that for the most part has already been solved. And while there might be a slight improvement, it doesn't really add much to the value of care and the outcomes. And more importantly, it just increased the costs, right? So why does the world need another surgical robot?
Yeah, so I think, you know, surgical robots in laparoscopy have come a long way in terms of restoring control for the surgeon. You know, surgical robots were about giving a surgeon the control over all the different instruments that are being used in a procedure and really bringing back that control to the surgeon, because, you know, when the whole field of surgery shifted to laparoscopy, that control of, you know, the vision, the tissue exposure, the active instruments, that control got distributed over a number of people in the OR. And so surgical robots came in and said, hey, you know, we have the technology, we have the ability to, you know, give control over, you know, multiple instruments, four instruments, five instruments to the surgeon. And you know, we have a way to basically give that back. In doing that, however, given how these systems were, you know, designed and architectured, they placed the surgeon behind a console, you know, in a corner in the room. And so the surgeon got that control back, but they got it at the expense of situational awareness. You know, they were behind a console, they had to move to the side, you know, in order to see their assistants, in order to see what was going on with the patient. And they also lost their agility in doing that. You know, they were out of the sterile field, they couldn't react to anything popping up during the procedure and to any, you know, emergency very easily. And so a lot of the approaches today in, you know, robots in laparoscopic surgery follow a similar basically, you know, thinking and get to different variations of how things are, you know, being placed in the room, but it's very much a similar approach. And so we think that the issues related to, you know, being aware of what's going on in the room, being able to react, being able to communicate with your team, being able to face, you know, any of the, you know, unexpected things that happen in surgeries, all these platforms are going to be, you know, facing the same limitations. And so the reason why we felt there was a need for something else is we felt today there was enough technology, knowledge, data leverage that we would be able to bring the control to the surgeon, but keeping the surgeon at the OR table, keeping the surgeon next to the patient, keeping the surgeon next to you know, their nurses, in a way that would, you know, give them that control at the center of the room without any workflow disruption, essentially.
Got it. And, you know, it's interesting you mentioned that, you know, I'm going to bring up, so LinkedIn, a lot of the people in our industry are a little bit shy, but I'll bring in one commenter, a surgeon, Dr. Mazen Khatib, who says, yeah, very true. Surgeon can't be out of the operating field. That's one issue with a lot of surgical robots. And there you see it, his comment. For those who are, again, watching live, if you want, just to kind of get the chat going, drop a comment. Let us know where you're joining us from. I know people are joining from all over the world, but let's hear from the audience, what city are you joining in from? That way we can get some questions going. So yeah, and that's a really interesting point. And that was one thing that stood out to me about you know, your articles you wrote about the future, about the empowered surgeon, that you can't tuck the surgeon in a corner. And you guys put some interesting, like funny holiday videos that came out about not putting surgeon in the corner. Jeff, you know, as somebody who has such a very impressive and deep background in surgical robotics, you know, You were employee number zero, technically employee number one over at Auris. You worked on with Fred Moll side by side. You know, what was it about Moon that got you very excited? And there we go. Now we see some people commenting. So Pooja's coming in from Washington, D.C. Hi, Pooja. Thank you. Joanne from Paris. People in Paris are joining. All right. NYC, Anthony Owosu. Thank you. Keep the comments coming, everybody. So, Jeff, if you can kind of riff on that a little bit, like what about it really intrigued you?
Yeah. So similar to what you said at the beginning here, Omar, I mean, holds true with me. Everything that I've seen in the laparoscopy space for surgical robotics has been incremental, and it hasn't solved all of the problems that are faced in laparoscopy with robotics. If you take a step back, I mean, the sheer fact is that there's about 20 million procedures out there that can benefit from robotic-assisted laparoscopy. And today, there's only about 1.2 million procedures that actually are. That means there's a huge opportunity out there for procedures like hernia repair, hysterectomy, appendectomy, cholecystectomy, you know, high volume procedures where there could be incredible benefit to restoring control to that surgeon, making sure that things are efficient, making sure that they're effective, and that, you know, these procedures run smoothly. And when I met Anne and was introduced to the Moon system and kind of the vision that she had and what they were building, it's a completely different paradigm than anything that you've seen before and that I had seen before. And that's what excited me so much about joining the team here is this is not a robotic system where there's incredible market development and clinical development that needs to be done. This is a system that can be used anywhere where they're doing laparoscopy because it's using existing clinical technique and clinical training, and it's not a complex, hard thing to set up and use. You know, it takes 9 years today to train a new general surgeon. And then
nine years.
Yeah. And now that surgeon starts practice and what are they faced with? They're faced with, okay, well, now I have to learn a whole new device, a telemanipulative robotic device that takes me 100 cases to get proficient at. I mean, that's not sustainable in today's healthcare market.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And just out of curiosity for you, you know, aside from CEO of Moon Surgical, you know, you're one of the rare professionals out there that you also are an investor and a venture capitalist here, you know, specifically Sophie Nova. So you've seen a lot of different technology. Based on what Jeff just, you know, mentioned about the long amount of time for training and everything, do you feel like that's one of the big barriers for surgical robotics? Because again, and for all the people who are watching surgical robotics right now, I don't want to, you know, upset anybody, but the fact is that we've penetrated the market, what, 2 or 3% for all surgeries worldwide, and it's been 20 years. It's really bad. Do you feel, Anne, that that's a big reason why this adoption barrier exists?
Yeah, it's definitely one of the reasons. And, you know, I think it's about workflow disruption as a whole, right? And workflow disruption is what triggers the need to retrain people. It's what triggers the need to define, you know, where ports are going to be placed, which new instruments are going to be used, what the surgeon is going to be doing throughout the procedure, what the staff surrounding the surgeon is going to be doing throughout the procedure, you know, how to set up the system, how to, you know, tear them down after the procedure. So, yeah, I mean, it's everything related to how these systems are used in an OR, basically from beginning to end, that mandates new training. And, you know, we mentioned surgeon training, which is, of course, an important piece of it. But staff training is also significant. When you train, you know, a surgeon on using Da Vinci, you actually train the whole team that's going to be in the OR when the Da Vinci system is being used. And there are some places and hospitals where only the trained Da Vinci team, you know, is able to basically run that room. And that has a huge, you know, impact in terms of organization and workflow. So it's definitely one of the limitations of previous systems. And we've seen, you know, probably all of them at Sofinnova Partners across the last few years. You know, we have not invested in a surgical robot. We felt, you know, as we said before, that a number of the approaches that are in development or on the market would be flawed with the same kind of structural limitations as intuitive surgical and Da Vinci.
Got it. And that makes a lot of sense. Now, we do have an interesting question in the audience, but, you know, of course, we have so many people joining. So I just want to give a shout out to some of the people. I'm sorry, everybody, I can't read everybody's name, but Gordon Buchanan coming in from London, Olin Palmer from Redwood Shores, Lisa Lounsborough from Chile, Minnesota, Bami Lees also joining from Paris. Hi, Bami. Thank you for joining us live. And a couple, Matthew Charlot from Marseille. I hope I pronounced that correctly. But now, before I get to our first audience question, I just want to remind everyone. So if you are a surgeon or you are a physician watching this, I have great news. This broadcast, whether you're watching it live or on demand, is actually eligible for a CME credit, one CME credit per your reflection. And that's courtesy of CMFI, which is a platform we've partnered with. So if you're interested, just check out that link below. I'm also going to drop a link in the comments, or you can go to the State of MedTech's LinkedIn page. You'll see it on this broadcast. So go and claim that CME credit. It's much better than spending a lot of money and trying to go to a conference rant, you know, somewhere. So anyways, and let's bring up this first comment, and this is coming from Lee Morrison. So let's bring it up. So he says, hi, Omar. Can Ann and Jeff elaborate on the functionality compared to a computer-assisted holding system for the camera? It appears that there is computer vision that is monitoring the movement of the instruments. Thanks. Great question, Lee. Thank you so much. He's also coming from a great organization over at Potrero. So I'm going to leave it to either one of you. Who wants to take this question on?
Do you want to do it?
Sure. With our system compared to, you know, some of the other computer-assisted holding systems, the surgeon is actually interfacing with the instruments, the traditional instruments, their preferred instruments that they always use. And they use them in the exact same way that they were trained. There's no change to the clinical technique or their practice. And what's elegant about that is it minimizes the training requirements and you know, make sure that there's not much learning curve with our system. So it's really easy to use. But it also maintains the fluidity that laparoscopy needs to stay efficient. Laparoscopy is a very dynamic and fluid procedure, right? It's soft tissue. Everything's moving around inside. There's a lot of motion outside. It's like a ballet. And you need to be able to maintain that. You can't compromise that. And by making sure that our system is so easy to move, that all you're doing is grabbing the handles of your traditional laparoscopy instruments, you're moving them around, you're using them like you're used to, it maintains that, and there's no compromise. You know, a lot of the other systems you're engaging with joysticks or you know, putting things down and having to grab buttons on the robot arms. None of that with our system.
Yeah, there is no interface, basically. You know, the surgeon is only grabbing and moving the instruments. The system will sense whether the surgeon is moving the instruments, in which case it will follow the surgeon's movements and offer no resistance, you know, in a freely moving, mechanically transparent way. And then the system will sense when the surgeon stops moving the instruments and wants them to be held in position. There is no additional control or movement required from the surgeon to engage one mode or the other.
Yeah. Got it. And actually, you know, if you don't mind, you know, I appreciate how kind you guys were pre-broadcast. A lot of companies don't want to share things, but this is, of course, public on your guys' website. So for those who are interested, let me just put up the banner. For more information, go check out moonsurgical.com. You can see this video, but let me bring up that video from Moon from your website, because it just shows some images of the system. I know that's, just to our audience, please don't text me right now. Just leave a comment if you guys want to see the video. But anyways, let me share my screen real quick. Here we go. And I'm going to, let me know when you guys can see my screen, Jeff and Ann.
Yeah, we can see it.
So let me press play and of course, lower the volume here. But here's a nice view of the robots. Maybe you can talk through some of these things that we're seeing for the audience to understand.
Sure. So, you know, the system here is approached close to the OR table at the beginning of the procedure. It's being set up. You can see it's very easy and fast in terms of setup. So basically, we have two arms in the system. There's a number of, setup joints, and the arms can be independently positioned in order to optimize the workspace for the surgeon. And so that is going to be different for every, clinical indication, every OR environment, every single surgeon. So we have an ability to, basically adapt to whatever the needs are here. Mm-hmm. And then, the scope and the retractor are attached to the arms, and the surgeon is ready to go. They will hold the instruments in place, except when the surgeon needs to grab them and move them around to reposition them.
Interesting. Yeah, and what's something that stands out to me to the system, that was the first thing that I liked was, like every robotic system, you see somebody that's pushing it into the operating field. But the thing that really stood out to me, and at least when I spoke to some general surgeons, I said, hey, what stands out to you in this video? Everyone said the same thing, which is like, oh, the surgeon's staying there. Here we see the surgeon. So the surgeon not being moved away. And I think that's something that's really appealing to the surgeons. And by the way, again, not to make you guys nervous, I know this is the first live stream you've done, but we've just hit over 100 viewers live. So congratulations. A lot of people are very interested. But let me come back. We had an interesting question. Now, me personally, I don't like features and comparison and everything, but this is the one question on, I think, on a lot of people's mind. And specifically, since this comes from a clinician, I do want to bring up this question, if I can find it. Here we are. So like every live stream, there's going to be some technical difficulties. So that's okay. This happens. That's why we do it on this broadcast. I can't pull up the comment at the moment because it went away, but it was from Dr. I'm looking at it here on LinkedIn. It's Dr. Mashi. Me 1 second, everyone. Let me just find this comment. Well, Dr. Mashi, the main question that they asked, and if you don't mind me, I want to answer this because I feel like every robot that comes out, even if it's a robot for knee surgeries, gets immediately compared to Intuitive, right? And the question was like, how's this, differentiate against Intuitive? I'm going to answer that just based on what I see. This is the main differentiation is that the surgeon's not being put out of the operating field. This is one thing that at least for general surgeons, they're not crazy about because they're, with all respect to Intuitive, I think they've built an amazing robot. The one problem is that the surgeon's not in the operating field anymore. And then every time they're operating, something happens, they got to look up and communicate. And so where there's been some enhancements, there's also been some setbacks, I think, communication. How would you answer that question? Like what would you say the main, the biggest differentiator? And let's not just say Intuitive, let's say, a lot of these telemanipulator robotic systems.
Yeah. So I think the biggest differentiator for us is control, right? We maintain control of all of those instruments and the scope. Like the Intuitive gives the surgeon, the Intuitive's Da Vinci. But we also restore control of the rest of the operating room, right? That situational awareness that Ann spoke of. Everything that is critical in the operating room is within arm's reach for the surgeon. And everything else is within line of sight. They understand what's going on with the patient. They understand what's going on with their team. And they understand what's going on with our system and their tools. And they have direct control over all of that stuff. And I think that really resonates with surgeons. Back before laparoscopy in open procedures, that's what they had. they saw with their own eyes, they interacted with their own hands, and they were in control and they were at the center of the operating room. With laparoscopy, they lost that, like Ann mentioned. And so I think that is the biggest differentiator between us and a lot of the other systems. And that allows us to be used in a much more broad set of potential procedures.
Got it. Fantastic. And I found that comment is from Dr. Sahar Hashmi, who's MD, PhD. Dr. Hashmi, thank you so much for asking that question. We had another really interesting question, but of course, so we are well over 110 now, but just to give a few more shout outs to people, we have John Mills joining in from Brisbane, Australia, Claire Van Dojen also calling in from Paris, Fawd Kesarwani. We have a lot of people from Australia joining in. Thank you. Thank you to everybody down under. So we have this question from Matt Polowicz. I swear I'm getting like the most difficult last name, so I hope I'm not butchering it. But the question is the monitor for the surgeon in 3D, and is there a possibility for a headset to be used now or in the future? That's a really good question because, again, I think headsets are great, but going to make some people upset. I feel like sometimes these headsets are used not because they actually add that much value to the surgery, but it's because, oh, it's cool and techie and it's you know, I'm a marketing guy. I see it as like a marketing ploy, because when I think of some of these headsets being used, my thing is like, well, yeah, this is cool, but like, is this actually improving the surgery? So if you can answer Matt's question, Anne or Jeff.
Yeah. So surgeons, you know, using our system will use, existing instruments, right? Off the shelf laparoscopic instruments, which include, of course, a scope. So, you know, we come into the procedures with the existing lab tower, which means that, you know, if there's a 3D scope there, of course, our system is compatible with that 3D scope. Similarly, you know, the surgeon will use their preferred instrument set. They can be attached to our arms. We have a number of different couplers to allow that attachment, and we're compatible with any laparoscopy tool out there. We're not providing instrumentation, and we're not providing the scope nor the lab tower. So we are compatible with 3D vision. And then in terms of, you know, the headset, I mean, I'm not a specialist here. I have discussed recently with our surgeon founder, Professor Gaillet, who indicated that he has, you know, seen or heard of, prototypes coming for 3D vision without a headset. And it's only a matter of time until these are in the operating rooms. But again, it has nothing to do with the technology we would provide.
Got it. Fantastic. Fantastic. A lot of great questions, by the way. So I want to bring up another question. I have some questions. I have my own questions, but I want to be fair to the audience. So another question we got, this is actually Dr. Nikhil Shah out of Georgia. He's a robotic surgeon. And he asked, can you speak to the investigations you have done looking at surgeons' need for situational awareness? I do not perceive this to be a huge issue. So that's Dr. Nikhil Shah. He's in urologic oncology. Can you speak about that? Because I think that was, you know, something that you really highlighted in your articles, Anne, which is this idea of like situational awareness.
I think, you know, it will depend, of course, on the clinical indication and war team and setup. But we have heard in our market research that, you know, the fact that, surgeons are able to easily communicate with the rest of their team, the fact that they're able to react to, you know, not necessarily emergencies, but just like impromptu things happening during the surgery is important to them. And is, you know, one of the things that they've had to give away with using the Da Vinci robots. So of course, you know, if you think about urology specifically, and Dr. Shah is a urologic surgeon, you know, the reason why Da Vinci was adopted in prostatectomy is because the benefits or the value it provided greatly outweighed that loss of situational awareness. And that had a lot to do with the anatomy in which the procedure was done and the ability to provide wristed instrumentation to help with suturing. And in that particular clinical indication, it made such a difference that, surgeons were ready to adopt it, even though they would be behind a console with the limitations that this generates. We think that in other procedures, general surgery, whether it's cholecystectomies or hernia repairs or bariatric procedures, there might not be that, killer feature or, specific need or requirement in the procedure where surgeons would feel comfortable giving away that situational awareness. And so we think, it's a huge benefit to restore it for a number of settings and indications.
Fantastic. And again, I want to get to, there's a couple of questions I want to ask, but we're getting some great questions from the audience. Now, again, we're in JP Morgan week, so this could not be a live stream for JP Morgan week if we didn't talk about some broader topics about the future and everything. So I have a very interesting question from Anthony Owusu, who is actually a senior manager in medical quality systems over at Whoop. And Anthony, just want to let you know, I got my Whoop on right now. Big fan of that company. Great company when it comes to presenting data. Wearables have been around. I never cared for them, but I bought a Whoop because of how they actually presented data clinically. And for me, heart rate variability and some other things have been very important for me. They do a great job. So let me bring up Anthony's question here. So Anthony asks, any thoughts or opinions on how machine learning and AI technology will impact surgical robotics? And before you and Jeff answer this, I just have to stir up a little controversy. This is an interesting question because my perspective on surgical robotics is everybody has this data, quote unquote data. And because they just have data in their robots, they think, oh, we can do AI. When in reality, I think that there's so much limitations around how surgical robotic companies think about data, right? So if you guys can kind of answer it, maybe Anne, from your perspective as an investor and somebody who's a VC, and Jeff, from your perspective as a surgical robotic technologist.
Sure. Yeah. So I'll start. I think, it boils down to which data you're collecting and, what information you're actually measuring and sensing during the procedure. And then the second big pillar is, how do you translate that data into actionable features? I agree with you, Omar. There's a lot of hype around data stories, but, translating that into, product features and real concrete benefits to the users is something that has been, missing a bit. There's a lot of different ways to measure data in an operating room, whether it's, the laparoscopy feed, which will instruct about what's going on inside the abdomen and the different phases of the procedure and how the surgeon is basically performing through these different steps. There's a number of things about getting environmental data from the OR and a number of projects out there to basically understand how the operating room is getting managed throughout the procedure and in between procedures and drive increased efficiency. We at Moon have a very unique data stream because, as long as instruments are held by the arms of our platform, we are sensing and measuring basically all the forces and movements and positions that the surgeon is applying to these instruments. So we have a unique ability to measure the surgeon himself or herself, which other robotics platforms have not had because it was a remotely manipulated rigid arm, driving the instruments. Our arms are freely moving; they're following what the surgeon is dictating, and we're measuring that constantly at the same time. I think we're in a very unique position because we have that data. We'll get that knowledge over time and as surgeons keep using our system. And we will, of course, also be collecting the laparoscopy data as well as the environment. Our system is equipped with a LiDAR camera, and that gives us basically a room sensing ability before and during the procedure. And then, so again, you know, first piece is, you know, the data you collect and how relevant that data is, how unique it is as well. The second piece is about turning that data into product features and things that can be implemented on the products, things that can be cleared by the FDA or regulatory authorities, and that can be used on a daily basis to improve the user experience, essentially. And so maybe here, Jeff, you want to comment on how we view this, what prism we have, and how we select how we're going to leverage the data?
Yeah, so I think when it comes to AI, there's a lot of potential out there, but there's the bar is really high in a lot of the areas, especially the typical areas where you hear. And so our prism in how we look at it is very different. We think there is a lot of opportunity, for instance, outside of the actual operation for where AI can help in surgical robotics. And, you know, it's something that we're very excited about in our development roadmap and to have the capability to do in our system.
Yeah, and the focus for us is really to leverage the data to improve ease of use, just to make it as easy as possible to use for the surgeon, but also for the staff, and as you said, just before and during the procedure. And so that's where we think, you know, we can, you know, learn from everything we're measuring and turn that into product features that that will be useful from the get-go.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Now, we're getting a lot of great questions. So to the audience, please bring your submit your questions. I'm going to bring them up. But selfishly, this is also my show. So I want to get a chance to ask some questions as well. Now, Anne, Jeff, I really would like to have you guys back, you know, in the very near future. But I have to ask a question. It's a little controversial and provocative. I feel like it's on everybody's mind. But in answering this question, okay, I'm going to ask the question. I'm going to bring up the video again, and we're going to look at it. And I want you to explain this to me. When you look at robotics, you kind of have four types, right? You have, you know, a multi-port, right? So that's like, you know, your intuitive Da Vinci system. You have a single port. You know, I guess Vicarious is like that. You have like co-manipulation. Mako is a great example. Yeah, that's a good example. And then you have scope holders. So now I'm going to bring up the video. How is this not like a scope holder, instrument holder? Please do not just log off. I know I have to ask this question. It's JP Morgan week. People are wondering about it. I'm going to be the guy that asks it. That's the point of the show. So I'm going to bring up the video again. Give me 1 second. And while you guys were answering the question, I brought up in a very specific area. Let me know when you can see my screen.
Yeah, we can see it.
Yep.
All right, I'm going to press play. Tell me how this is different from a scope holder.
Sure. So, you know, scope holders have been on the market for probably over 20 years. And scope holders or retractor holders for that matter, because, you know, you find actually both, are great for one thing. They provide stability, right? They provide a stable vision or they provide a stable retraction. But that you know, positioning is static, right? It's not dynamic. These holders have, you know, different ways to interface with the surgeon or the staff, but they're not easy to manipulate, right? You have to unscrew them and position them differently and rescrew them, or you have to dry them using a joystick. Or voice activation in the past. Anyway, there's basically some level of interface that is going to disrupt the surgeon's, you know, focus and attention and require some level of interaction with that scope or retractor holder. So, you know, what we've found in our market research and working with surgeons in our labs is that, you know, stability is great, but stability without control is not enough. And that's probably one of the reasons why these scope holders have not been, you know, used in the market in the majority of procedures out there. That we work with a number of surgeons who felt that, you know, it provided such benefits, you know, in terms of stability, that they would basically cope with the difficult control and repositioning of these things. But these would be the minority of surgeons today. So what we bring is, of course, not only a stable vision and a stable retraction, but a dynamic one, which is under the control of the surgeon in a way that doesn't disrupt the workflow. And of course, we provide two arms, so we're able to do two things at the same time, which brings even more value in the procedure.
Got it. Yeah, and you know, I'm glad you clarified that again. Thank you for being open and kind of playing ball here. But in terms of it being dynamic, like I do see that now. I didn't think about this before, but I think yeah. So right here, where you see the robot actually moving. Shows that dynamic movement. So that's fair. I think that makes a lot of sense that it's more than just a scope holder.
Yeah.
Please jump in on this.
It comes back to that fluidity and not impacting the pace of the procedure, right? And disrupting it. It's really, you're able to just grab the scope at any point in time in 3D space and just reposition it and let it go. And it stays there, and it's the same thing with any of the instruments that we're holding. It's a brilliant capability that surgeons love using. It's great to watch them use the system.
Yeah, and I want to go back to the audience because I know there's some really interesting comments. They're just like filling up right now, but I do want to come back to this because one of the questions I want to talk about is, you know, computer vision. But again, really, really nice looking robot. Let me come back to you guys though. I'm gonna stop sharing my screen. And let's go back to the audience. Real quick, by the way, Dr. Nikhil Shah, something he wanted to comment on earlier when you were talking about data. He did say, couldn't agree more. I want actionable information and data, but not information that will distract me during a procedure, which I completely agree with. Again, you know, just like again to go back to the Whoop example. Data is great, but you don't want infinite data. Like the data actually has to be meaningful that you can take action on it and not just like, oh, data for the sake of data's sake, right? Because I think that provides no value to a physician. And of course, if you introduce data into the health system, especially specifically here in the US, people are going to look and say, well, we should do something with this, right? So it just, you know, makes it more difficult. Let's see. I want to bring on Henry Peck. So, and by the way, some of these questions, you know, might open up to confidential information that you can't talk about. If that's the case, please let me know. We're going to move on. But as the host of the show, I have to just, you know, I'm a tool of the people. So Henry Peck, he says, hey, listening from the DC airport en route to SF, Transenterica Sensus had Synhance that attempted to restore the familiar control paradigm of LAP using a robotic platform, but ultimately it lost to DVS XI. I guess this is Da Vinci. What do you see as the driving need and potential clinical benefit in deviating from the console-driven control paradigm? And as you can tell, for those who are not familiar, Henry Peck is one of the like young up and coming voices for not just medtech surgical robotics, but specifically Web3. Great question. Jeff, can you as a product leader, can you touch on this or?
What do you see as the driving need and clinical benefit in deviating from console driven control paradigm? Yeah, sure. So, you know, I think when you look at console-driven control paradigm, it does three things very well. It provides 3D stereoscopic vision, and it provides wristed capability, the ability to have fine control over suturing, and you know, it provided the control of the instruments. But it was at the cost of removing that surgeon, right? And so it increased the need for communication across the room, communication and understanding of the robot and the team and the patient. And you see this in clinical studies that have studied the communication in robotic adoption. And it's one of the reasons why the learning curve on robotic systems is so high. Now, deviating from that console paradigm restores the control back to the surgeon, allows them to use their existing techniques that they were trained on. So it keeps that learning curve flat, and it keeps them in a situation that is aligned with their practice and their training. And when it comes to other things like stereoscopic vision and wristed capability, I mean, those are things that you can get outside of robotics at this point, right? Olympus has 3D endoscopes, and there are a number of wristed manual instruments out there now. And so I think there is great potential in moving away from that paradigm in what we're doing at Moon.
And also just thinking about, the added, time it takes to use these console-driven systems, in every single procedure, right? There's a lot of literature out there on how much longer it makes procedures, which has, direct impact on OR efficiency and how many patients can be treated and et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, the point Anne brings up is totally true. Like when you think about surgery is always getting more minimally invasive, and it's always getting driven to more outpatient centers, ASCs, and that trend will continue into the future. And so the robots of the future need to be well suited to those facilities, right? To outpatient centers and ambulatory surgery centers and places that are focused on efficiency and high volume. And so you need to get to a situation where your system can be set up very quickly. Today, for instance, in a cholecystectomy, this is a procedure that's usually about 40 minutes long. But if you were to set up a Da Vinci, it's going to add a ton of time and a ton of cost, right? It's going to, I think it goes to about 100 minutes from 40 minutes.
Yeah. I've mentors from Intuitive. I have a lot of respect for that organization. I mean, they're really, they pioneered the field, but, and again, speaking from somebody who has a father who's a general surgeon, when it comes to cholecystectomy, can you do a cholecystectomy using a Da Vinci? Yeah, absolutely. You can also deliver a newspaper and a Lamborghini. You probably don't need it.
Yeah.
I'm going to my inbox is going to blow up after that one, but it's just true. And I think again, especially now, Dr. Kasim Butt, who is a nephrologist, big on value-based care. Value-based care is this like buzz term that's been thrown around like probably more than AI. But especially these days after COVID, this concept of value-based care, which is how much better do the outcomes become with a specific piece of technology? And more importantly, does this actually drive up costs? It is so incredibly important. And so I'm glad you mentioned that, Jeff. Let me ask and thank you all for the questions. Keep bringing the questions. If you're just joining on live, drop a comment. Let me know where you're joining in from and throughout the world. Thank you for those who are joining from Australia, France, various areas in the US, from the airport, apparently. But Anne, Moon Surgical has been rather, quiet, especially leading up to JPM. For JPM week, people are raising money, so they're making a lot of noise, they're marketing a lot and everything. Not so much for Moon, but it is JPM week. And so for the investors and the VCs who are watching, why Moon Surgical? If they're looking at their fund and they're trying to figure out where they should allocate some of their portfolio, what are the big drivers for Moon from an investment standpoint?
Yeah. So, the main reason why we've been quiet until now is we've been focused, right? We started working on the project just a year ago. We assembled a team a year ago. The team was not complete until July. And what we've done in a year was basically, develop, a prototype that is now ready to get into the clinic. So we've been very focused. We've been very much obsessed with the value we're delivering with the first embodiment of the system that we'll bring into the clinic, and which is why you haven't heard much about us. We are more active now and speaking out. In terms of what is attractive about Moon from an investor standpoint and why people should be interested, it's about the uniqueness and the differentiation, right? As we said at the beginning of this session, there have been a lot of approaches, and some of them are in development, some of them are on the market in some markets. But those approaches have largely followed the existing paradigm. And we're offering something that is completely different, that has potential for much broader applicability in much more diverse settings. We say when we pitch to investors, we say we're going into that market, the 93% of the market, which currently are not served with robotics assistance. We're going into that market with one thing we have and we believe others do not have, and that thing is adaptability to different clinical procedures, adaptability to different OR environments, to different surgeon preferences, to different patient anatomies. We have a system that is intrinsically very modular and can be, can deliver value over a large number of procedures. And we believe that it is that volume that will make the system accessible in any operating room. It's that volume that will enable us to develop a business model that sustains basically our device becoming an essential tool in every OR where laparoscopy is performed.
Got it. Fantastic. And thank you for diving into that. Because again, I think of our audience, the ones who are most quiet are the VCs and investors. They just don't want to ask that publicly, which is why, and the ones who I'm speaking about, they know who they are. That's why they're just blowing me up in my inbox, because they don't want to ask it publicly, but that's okay. I get it, guys. That's perfectly right. But that, try and get these questions to me before the broadcast, because I'm not checking my inbox like while I'm doing this. So there is a question from a gentleman I wanted to bring up. It's Michael Walker. He is a strategic platforms executive. He's over at Medtronic for the lung GPS. And again, I'll see which one of you guys want to take this, but it is an interesting question. And that question is, can either of you elaborate on provider fiscal responsibilities, perhaps not associated with Moon, but how is cost justified for low reimbursed procedures where patient safety, time in hospital, or improved outcomes are negligible? It's a good question. I'm wondering how you guys think about it.
Yeah, that's a good question. And to be perfectly transparent, I think it's a question that we have not fully vetted and explored yet, right? We've spoken with a number of potential customer profiles, let's put it this way, whether it's a community hospital or an outpatient center or hospital owned ASC or another type of ASC. We've spoken with them to understand, their current pain points and understand how we could build a product that would alleviate some of these pain points. The impact of, putting our system in the OR and, to some extent, getting it, of course, used clinically in routine practice, and the adjustments that would need to be made to integrate our system is something that we need to work on more. That being said, we haven't heard any particular concerns when we spoke with, hospital executives or surgeons on how our platform could be adopted, right?
Yeah, and I would say that the other side of the value equation is, around cost. Like, I always go back to cataract surgery. Cataract surgery is one of the highest volume surgeries in the United States. It's like 4 million procedures a year, right? And so those procedures had to be funneled into high efficiency centers, ASCs. And the equipment that was developed for cataract surgery had to be developed so that its turnaround time was seconds. And that's the same type of technology or approach that we need to think about for robotics or technologies in that support laparoscopy in procedures like cholecystectomies or hysterectomies. I mean, if you were to grab all the cholecystectomies, hysterectomies, appendectomies, and hernia repairs across the United States and Europe and Asia, it's like 24 million procedures, right? That's a lot of surgical volume. And technologies need to be well suited to quickly be turned over and support that volume.
Got it. Thank you. Thank you for that. Let me remove this. We have a physician from France actually who asked an interesting question. I can't help but bring it up. And again, you may not be able to answer this because technically this might, you know, reveal more than you want, but I have to bring it up. And this gentleman has a great profile picture, by the way. Jean-Claude, very, very nice profile picture. I like it. Very, this means, so Jean-Claude Kufnau says, how can we make endo-oral procedures with this kind of device? You can just say like, no comment, by the way. But I figured, you know, why not?
Good question. So it's not something we've, you know, worked on so far. You know, we think our device has currently applicability anywhere where, you know, you're going to need to hold, you know, either a scope or a retractor or something, you know, like an active instrument that basically would benefit from that stability and control. If we have, you know, not really considered supporting flexible endoscopy procedures, right? If that is the question, you know, that being said, you know, we're compatible with a lot of things out there, right? So further down the road, you know, there might be potential for that.
Don't worry, I didn't go anywhere. I was having trouble clicking. Well, great. You know, we still have a lot of people, like a little over 70 people watching live. I want to make a small little bit of a shift. This is, again, a question from me. And let me bring it up. So one of the things, again, we're doing this across LinkedIn, YouTube, Twitter. So we have a lot of people joining from all over the world. Right now, I'm mainly focusing just on the comments coming from LinkedIn and Twitter. But a lot of potential employees are also watching this. Just, you know, from an employment brand standpoint, can you talk to us a little bit, like, again, there's some A players, as you know, it's a very competitive environment to hire these days, especially when it comes to robotics, because you're dealing with software, you're dealing with computer vision. So simple question, why would someone want to join Moon Surgical's team? So if you guys can talk about the team, the culture, I think that would be really great for those who are watching and considering that maybe they want to make a leap over to you guys.
Yeah, that's a great question, Omar, and we'll be recruiting, you know, for a lot of positions later this year, so it's very timely. So, you know, we have assembled a team, which is a small team today. You know, it's 8 people across, you know, Paris and San Carlos here in the Bay Area, you know, with, I would say, the majority of people being here and a small, you know, half being in France. We're going to grow the team the same way. There's a lot of benefits to having some coverage geographically, and there's a number of things that we need to manage on the European side as well going forward. You know, we've hired so far an extraordinary team, which was very experienced in developing surgical robots and developing, you know, medical software and bringing these prototypes both into the clinic and then into the market. We've had an extremely efficient year with, you know, the ability to work basically almost around the clock, right? You had people working in Paris, and then when they were done, then the US team would take over and things would get delivered in the morning. I mean, it was amazingly efficient despite the pandemic. So, you know, for, you know, going forward, I mean, that is, you know, one of our number one, focus basically for the year. It's making sure we grow the team, keeping that spirit, keeping the pace that we've enjoyed in the past year, and keeping that expertise, that agility. We've had a very successful year. We've had some good surprises. We've had some moments where we've had to shift some resources to adapt to vendors not delivering on time, and so we had to integrate things in ourselves. And so we want this spirit and this agility and this expertise across the board to remain the same. So we think it's a very exciting opportunity, and we'd love to get CVs and candidates. We'll be hiring towards the spring and the summer a lot.
Fantastic. And thank you for sharing that. And by the way, I'm going to say, Jeff, I think Anne pretty much said it all. But anything you'd like to add? Because again, from me, from my perspective, I took a very strong interest in Moon Surgical when they were able to recruit somebody like you, seeing that you had, started early in your career in surgical robotics and worked side by side with Fred Moll. So your criteria for the kind of team and technology that you want to be a part of is very, very high. I mean, if you can kind of talk a little bit about that as well.
Yeah. Anne is a brilliant leader. She challenges us and brings out the best in us constantly. And she does it in a way that is incredibly inspiring. And, the team that we built and the way that we've set up our ways of doing work are efficient, they're goal-driven, they're focused, and they're fun. And I think that's really great reasons to come work at Moon.
Got it. Fantastic. Thank you for mentioning that. Now, as we're kind of getting close to wrapping up, and we still have a lot of people who are on live, again, thank you all for submitting your questions. You can submit a few more. I think, Anne and Jeff probably don't mind taking a few more questions. And for the physicians who are watching, again, as a reminder, your reflection on this live stream, or if you're watching it on demand, is eligible for a CME credit via CMFI. I went ahead and dropped a link. All you have to do is click that link, write a few sentences on what you learned, and you'll get one full credit, which is fantastic, right? I have to give a little shout out. Moon Surgical is the very first surgical robotics company and medical device company to do this, which is essentially CME eligible credits through Reflection. So congratulations, and another first for you all.
Thank you.
But yeah, as we sort of wind down, there's a couple more questions that I have and from the audience, but just, anything else you guys want to touch on that maybe we didn't get to asking about. And I think this is the big opportunity, is that, when we're in these startups, there's so many things about the story and the technology and people that, you wish you had an opportunity to talk about. And so I want to give you guys that opportunity now, but you can kind of take it in any direction you want.
I think I want to give a lot of credit to our surgeon founder, Professor Brice Gaillet, who might be listening, today. He had been working on this technology with a lab in academia for a number of years, and had this vision, for how it would be implemented in the ORs. So we've been very fortunate to work, with him. And, of course, on top of opening a lot of doors, he is a constant resource for product testing and labs. And I wanted to make sure I mentioned him and his contribution in that session.
Absolutely. That's fantastic. Yeah. And I think, I think that's the most important thing, is that early on, the kind of clinical leadership that you have at a company, it's really important, because no matter how great a technology is, all technology is born ugly, And so, but your baby's beautiful, by the way. I like it. But I'm sure at the very beginning, not for us.
It will get beautiful, Omar.
much appreciated. So we still have a lot of comments coming in. I know we're getting close. We're past the hour. Do you guys have a few more minutes? Can you take a few more questions?
Sure.
Okay. And again, I know it's JP Morgan week. You guys are pressed for time, but I just want to, see if there's any one, maybe one more good. So I see a couple. Everyone who's in the chat listening on Twitter or LinkedIn, YouTube, drop a question. I'm going to grab one more question for them to answer. So let me take a look. All right, this is not, there's some, people are throwing in all kinds of interesting questions, but I'm not going to put those up. Hold on, everybody. All right, let's see. All right, so I'm, audience, I love you guys. These aren't the questions that I can pull up. All right, so we're gonna, so I'm gonna sort of wrap it up here. Oh, hold on, there might be one that I can use. Right when I say the last question, the audience is like, let me just throw the craziest question that I'm. They know better than this. There was, you know what? I saw one earlier that was a good one. Let me see if I can find it. Okay, so Lee Morrison asked some great questions. I'm gonna bring this one up again. This could be something that you guys cannot talk about quite yet, but I think it's an important one, especially for the healthcare administrators that might be watching this. And, you know, surgeons have become more savvy to ask about these things. The question from Lee Morrison is that, is there a disposable revenue stream based on the system utilizing traditional lap instruments and video endoscopy systems? Also, is there a long-term data surgical automation navigation strategy? Okay, so Lee, that's two questions. We're going to go with the first one because that's the one I'm actually most interested in, is like, disposables, what does that look like? And so when a hospital acquires and starts using the system, you know, what does that those costs look like, if you can share?
Yeah, I think you know, the question is around business model and how that is going to be structured. You know, there's a number of options for business models. We believe that there might be some, you know, smarter ways of doing it than selling equipment outright. So that we can capture basically revenue driven from the usage of the system. And also, you know, in doing that, have an ability to track and support our users with, you know, the right consumables, the right service levels, or deliver additional automation features down the road. So yeah, we will have a business model that supports that with recurring revenue.
Fantastic. And just as we wrap up, I gotta give a shout out to our audience. You know, it's grown quite fast. We have a great audience, but you know, they make my job much easier. Look, we have Wesley Kennedy Sitta, who mentioned, who's a part of the Mullings group down in Florida, says great article on Moon Surgical and last month's MedTech Strategist art, you know, by David Kasich. I agree, that's a great article. For those who are interested in that article, you can click that link that Wesley shared. Wesley, thank you so much. Seriously, make my job easier here. Or you can go to Moon Surgical. I know that it's still, I think it's on your LinkedIn page, but, and I know it's featured on your page, which is the PDF. Mm-hmm. It's a great article about not just Moon Surgical, but the state of surgical robotics. So as we wrap up, and again, I want to thank our wonderful audience for tuning in live. We broke 100, so that's a high bar to hit. But also to thank, you know, you, Anne, for coming on and being so like open book and open to doing this. And Jeff, you know, great reconnecting with you guys. But maybe final thoughts for each of you. And why don't we start with Jeff first, and then Anne can close out the show.
I'm very excited for the future, and not just because of what Moon is building, but because there's a lot of great innovators out there working in healthcare. And I think we've all learned to understand, to develop solutions, not for the problems we have today, but for the problems that we'll have tomorrow, for the market needs of tomorrow. And I'm excited to see what the next 10 years holds for surgical robotics and med tech.
Yeah, and you know, I agree with Jeff. I think, you know, our system or our approach at Moon Surgical is also an approach that, you know, works towards solving some of the issues of a non-sustainable healthcare system, in terms of efficiency and workforce workflow in the OR. So we're very, you know, focused and eager to bring our system in the clinic. You know, hopefully this is something that happens this year, and then into the market. So we're very committed and eager to get you know, feedback from our users and from patients who get the benefit from our system.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. And again, another shout out to the audience, you know, so Bami Lee, thank you so much, Bami, pulling up the article with no paywall, so nobody has to worry about that. Check that out over on Sophie Nova's main website. Beautiful new website, by the way, Bami. I just checked it out. Very, very nice. Wonderful. Jeff, Ann, thank you so much for joining. I'm going to take you off for a second, but just stay backstage. I'm going to come off offline to talk to you guys. So give me a quick moment. Let me just say goodbye and farewell to our wonderful audience. So everyone, there you have it. Moon Surgical, our first JP Morgan live stream with Surgical Robotic Leadership. If you're interested in learning more about Moon, let me pull up the banner. Look at that, the power of the internet. Head over to moonsurgical.com. They have some interesting videos there, some PDFs. Go check it out, learn more about it. If you're a physician, do not forget, you can get a CME credit for your reflection, not this video, by the way, but watching this webinar live or on demand. You do get a CME credit. Just check the link below, or you can check this on our State of MedTech LinkedIn page, right? Thank you to our partner, CMFI, who makes this possible so that we can bring continuing education to physicians and clinicians all around the world through our podcast and blog. So with that being said, if you're a MedTech company and you want to come and sit in the hot seat and join for another live stream, hit me up on LinkedIn or Twitter or whatever social media platform you're on, slide into the DMs, pitch me, and let's see whether or not it's worth bringing you on as well. I'm your host and head of state, Omar M. Khatib. This has been another live edition, live stream of the State of MedTech. Thank you all for your attention. Thank you, audience, and we'll see you next time. Bye for now. Thank you for listening to another episode of The State of MedTech. I'm your host, Omar M. Khatib. Do us a favor, if you like this episode, share with somebody, and go ahead on Apple and Spotify, wherever you are, leave a 5-star review, type a few nice notes about us. This is how we get other people to find the show. Thank you, and we'll see you next time.